Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's great to have you company for another episode of the show. Now, if you've been in practice for any amount of time, you'll know that most of the challenges that business owners have, including practice owners, relate to people. And if we can improve how we communicate, if we can improve how we relate with one another, we're going to improve trust. And when we improve trust, we create engagement, productivity, and a whole heap of good stuff. One of the tools that I've been exposed to has been a tool called the Five Voices, delivered by the Giant Group of Companies. Now, one of the things I like about this tool is it's really accessible. It's really practical. I'm familiar with other tools like DISC and Myers-Briggs and Enneagram and all those things. And while they're all fine and great, I've just found this particular tool to be very useful because it's descriptive, it's practical, it's actionable. And as I said, it delivers real results. It's something that we've rolled out with our team. It's something we're rolling out with our clients. And I wanted to introduce you to the founder and creator of that today, Jeremy Kubicek, who's going to talk a lot about some of the frameworks that they have, the five voices, the five gears, the communication code, among other things, all of which, though, are designed to create common language, common understanding, to remove the likelihood of miscommunication, misunderstanding, and all the dramas that come from that. So I really hope you find this episode helpful. As always, do have a pen and paper handy because there's lots of pearls of wisdom, lots of nuggets of gold that you're going to want to write down and take note of. And for those people who are new to the podcast, welcome. Please go back and enjoy the back catalog. There's 400 and something episodes in there as we record this, lots of them in other words. And equally, please come and find the sister publication called the Savvy Dentist Magazine, which is a free resource which you can grab by going to SavvyDentist.com/magazine. And in that magazine, we have everything that you need to run a dental practice. And that magazine has been put together by practice owners for practice owners to help them on their journey to business success. So there's another resource there for you. But for now, let's get on to our conversation with Jeremy Kubicek. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I enjoyed recording it. Here he is. Jeremy Kubicek, thanks so much for taking the time to come and hang out with us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. How's things all the way in Oklahoma?
Oh, it's so good. So good to be with you in Australia, you know, even if it's online via video.
Jeremy, I've been a fan of your work for a while. And as I mentioned off air, I was introduced to your work by a good friend of mine, Rowan Dredge. And he introduced us to your work, particularly the Five Voices. And I thought that would be a really good place to start off because I think a lot of people on this call will be used to some sort of inventory or behavioral styles, you know, DISC or Myers-Briggs or other things. I'm curious to ask why you came up with the five voices and what was the gap that you saw that other inventories or other types of tools weren't really addressing?
Yeah, you know, Steve Cockrum and I, he's British, he's my business partner, we had this conundrum because we kept running into the same issue over and over again. We would talk to people and we would ask them, hey, yeah, so do you know your Myers-Briggs? And they're like, yeah, I'm an IFXDH.
Yeah.
And they didn't remember it. And we're like, okay, why is it so hard? And then we got to meet with people and, you know, we were pretty well versed in Myers-Briggs. And so we spent a lot of time and then we would meet with people on DISC and, yeah, I'm a high D, high I, but I don't really remember what that means. And then we would listen to people like, yeah, I'm Enneagram, I'm a 7 with a wing 8. And other people are like, I have no idea what you just said. I don't know. And blah, blah, blah. And we realized like most of the inventories, they're not common language. They're very, you have to know, you have to have spent the 2 weeks immersed in it, or you had to be at the retreat with that leader. We're like, well, what would it look like if we could actually create a system that would be simple enough for a 13-year-old to get? And if we did that, it would scale throughout all of the organizations and they would remember it longer, they would use it longer. So we simply took Carl Jung's work, which is where Myers-Briggs came from, and we went to the original source code and we rebuilt it and we built Five Voices off of the source code. And the Five Voices now translates, you know, relatively, it fits within Myers-Briggs. So if you're an SF in the middle two letters, that would be a nurturer.
Yeah.
Well, it's instead of saying ISFJ, you might say, I'm a nurturer connector, nurturer guardian. Or if you're an ENFP, I'm a connector creative.
Yeah.
So then the words connector, you know, you can, you know what that means. It's much more intuitive. Nurturer, guardian, pioneer, creative. They're just much more usable, and they stay longer. They're more sticky inside teams.
It's really interesting because we went through the process of understanding our voices, and I was sharing with you offline what mine are. I'm creative and pioneer, and obviously each of these voices come with it some strengths and maybe some things to be mindful of as well. But before we kind of get to those things, I'm just wondering, can we just describe the five voices and just maybe a quick overview of each of them?
Yeah. And so there's five voices. So, but they make up combinations. And the beauty of the five voices is that we're all of them.
Yeah.
We can play because by nature, I'm born a certain way, but I've adapted because of my dad or my businesses or my whatever. I can play all the voices. And so it's not a labeling as much as some of the other groups. But anyway, the five voices are based on their strength of their voice, the loudness of their voice. So the nurturer is 43% of the population. They're the quietest voice. And so the 70% of that group are female, are women. Wow. So you think that 43% of the population are the quietest voice, and they're the nurturer. So they take care of people. It's almost like chicken soup for the soul. They want everyone to be good. So you'll find them as stay-at-home moms. You'll find them as educators, nursing, anything that's caring for people and wanting to make sure that people are good. But they're just very quiet. They're not going to speak up. The next quietest voice is the creative. It's 9% of the population. So you're a small minority. But the 9%, they have these idealistic tendencies, perfectionistic tendencies in their head. And it's like a blueprint of how they think things should go. So they're constantly thinking about things, and it's all in context. Well, this led to this, led to this, and it's this blueprint. But this big ideas in their head have a hard time coming out of their mouth, and that's the creative. The third voice is the guardian, and they're the next quietest voice. They're right in the middle, and the guardians make up 30% of the population. 70% are men, and they are logical, black and white, grid system oriented. They're engineers and accountants, and they're in the military, and they're fire, and they're the police, and they're very logical and very much sticklers for how rules should be. And so again, and they're present oriented, along with the nurturers. That 73% of the population are present oriented, which is fascinating because 27% are future oriented, and most of the drama happens between present and future orientation. Then you have the last two voices, which are the louder voices. They're the ones who take all the oxygen out of the room. And I am these voices. Connector, which is 11% of the population. And they're like bees. They're pollinating. And they're always wanting to make sure, like, hey, I've got a guy. You need something? Or they're wanting to make sure. So they float around. They pollinate. And they're constantly helping people with ideas or connections, networks. And then the last voice, and it's 50-50, men or women. The last voice is the pioneer, and that's 7% of the population. Pioneers are like a general in the military. They're like, they're going to take that mountain, and they allocate people and resources, and they're very strategic. But it can feel cold as ice with them because they only want around their round table people that they think are competent to help them take that mountain. But if you're not around their table, that's saying something. Right. And so therefore they can become very abrupt, and they all have every one of these voices has a stress behavior and a tendency. The pioneers can just be very abrupt and feel like very me focused and dominating in some regards. They make up 7% of the population, but over 50% of the executive CEO roles in the world are made up of pioneers because they're chosen to win. People hire them because they have the best chance. So you have a lot of immature pioneers. You have over misrepresentation inside the ecosystem of executives or CEOs.
One of the things I'm curious about, and you know, I just want to talk about, can anyone be a leader? And as you said, we all have these five voices within us, and perhaps some of the time the volume of one goes up more than the other and so on and so forth. But you know, you mentioned that pioneers are overrepresented in the CEO type roles, and obviously that doesn't necessarily exclude others from a CEO type of role. How would a nurturer, for example, the quietest voice, become a leader in a world where they're the quietest person?
Okay, so we're getting into semantics and almost philosophy here.
Yeah.
The leader by role.
Yeah.
And title, or leader by actual instinct. Okay. So our view of a leader at Giant is the Sherpa on Mount Everest.
Yeah.
The Sherpa is the best example of a leader. They're climbing while helping people climb.
Yeah.
Climbership is what most leadership is. Meaning most people think that a leader is just successful in climbing and making and performing. And you're like, no. Performing is one part, but you have to lead people who are performing. Mm. So a nurturer might be a really, their performance out of 1 through 10, their performance might be a 7, but they may be a 9 as a leader because people trust them. They're focused on it. And when I interviewed the Sherpa for one of my books, I interviewed them at Mount Everest on base camp, and I asked them questions, and I said, so how many times have you summited? And they said, that's such a Western question, Jeremy. We don't know. And one of them pulled a belt out and he had 17 notches. And he goes, I don't know, but I've helped 17 people make it to the top. And it wasn't about how many times he made it to the top. It's about how many people he helped get to the top. So this whole idea of leadership is like, well, leadership by role or leadership by function? Like, great leaders don't have to be a pioneer. In fact, they might be called a leader and they might be do a really good job to get us to an objective, but they may be a horrible leader at a lower level because all they want to do is climb, not help other people climb.
That's a really good distinction. And I guess this is getting into the mature and immature version of a pioneer voice in a sense. I've got lots of different questions and I'm trying really hard not to ask these questions based on my own voice style because I'm curious naturally. But I'm curious, like, if you've got a CEO and the pioneers are typically overrepresented in that area, does it then make sense to surround yourself with a leadership team or at least a 2IC who's more of that nurturer style, who can then kind of be a bit of a buffer between you and the rest of the team?
Could be. Now, here's what I'd say. It's like oftentimes people say,
or become a mature pioneer is the other answer, right?
Or become mature. Because what happens is you'll have people like, well, you'll be the good cop, I'll be the bad cop.
Yeah.
And I'll play this role. And it's almost like it's giving me an excuse to not be intentional.
Yeah.
Versus, or learn the other voice. And the power of the five voices is that you can be all of them. So you need to learn the other voices. So if you learn, because here's the idea, know others to lead others.
Yeah.
When I was 21, I moved to Russia, moved to Moscow.
Okay.
And I started three companies in Moscow. When I was there, before I got there, I started learning Russian voraciously. My family's from Czechoslovakia, Slavic, languages. I knew a little bit of Czech. I had studied German. So when I got to Russia, I picked it up a little bit quicker than maybe some other people on our team. And so because of that, I became more advanced in my Russian. Я говорю по-русски, ты понимаешь почти всё. I've almost forgot everything, but I can speak Russian. I can listen to it and hear it still. Sometimes I'll dream it still. So guess what happened when I spoke the language? I was the best out of our group, one of the best at speaking Russian.
Mm.
Guess who had the most influence?
Mm, you.
Me.
Yeah.
Because I spoke their language.
Mm.
It's the same to five voices.
Yeah.
If you can learn how many nurturers are on your team, learn nurturer. It's a language. Learn guardian. It's a language. Connector, creative. And don't despise them, but value them. What's the best? It's like culture. Don't despise an Indian culture or Russian culture. What's the best that they bring to the world?
That makes such really profound sense. And to me, the language I'd use around that is simple but not easy. But
totally.
Like, it makes intelligent sense. It makes logical sense. But
you got to do the work.
We've got to do the work, right?
Got to figure it out.
So let's talk about doing the work. What does doing the work look like?
So my wife is a dental hygienist. And so one of her dentists, had a dentist that she worked with, that he passed away. He was a connector. He was brilliant he intuitively didn't know the voice language, but he intuitively did it. So if he's speaking to it, so a pioneer comes in, here comes John comes in, or Susan, the pioneer, and they come in the, his chair. He's not going to do a lot of chit chat. It's not going to do a lot of like, hey, how's your family? How you doing? Where are you? What are you doing this weekend? He's like, hey, good to see you. Any pain? What do we need to solve today?
Yeah.
Get to the point. Don't overly talk. Just do a really good job, confident. Hey, I just want you to know I went in and did X and Y. I feel really good about this. You might want to watch out for this. Do you feel good? We good? The guy's going to go, or the lady's going to high five. Awesome. God, my dentist is amazing.
Yeah.
Spoke my language. Guardian, we're going to get into, okay, now here we're going to do a root canal, and here's what this is going to mean. We're going to go in and do this, then we're going to do this, then we're going to do this. It might hurt a little bit here, but I need you to do this work. Afterwards, you're going to need, and give them an amazing amount of detail.
Yeah.
Connector, what are you doing this weekend? How's your family? Man, what are you fired up about right now? So each person, each voice, you can learn it over time. And it's almost like, who are they showing up as? Who are they playing on TV? Then all you do is you learn some simple little tricks and hacks. The creative, probably going to be pretty quiet.
Yeah.
It's probably going to have a lot of, so what are you into? What movies are you into these days? What are you reading that's interesting? It's going to be more mental. And then the nurturer is like, hey, how's Johnny? I knew he was not doing, you know, he came in the other day. Is he doing better? And all you need to do is care about what they care about. And now your influence has gone up. So you can figure out these little life hacks, these little hacks with each group, not to manipulate them, but to connect with them.
I really, really love that. And I think, you know, if we get this right, of course, what's going to happen is we're going to improve communication across the team, right? So everyone's going to feel valued. Everyone's going to feel respected. Everyone's going to feel important. And you would have seen, I'm sure, many teams over the years go from perhaps not being as aware of these different voices and how to communicate effectively. What do you typically see when you improve communication and everyone feels heard, seen, and respected, and so on?
So it immediately goes to relational trust. So from trust at the relational part, now all of a sudden alignment, oh my goodness, how much easier it is to get people aligned. Execution, because the reality is people want to work with people they like. They will get engaged. They will get empowered if they want to work with you, if you let them in. So building trust leads to alignment. It leads to execution. And then it leads to higher capacity. Have you ever noticed when someone is like, hey, yeah, Jesse, I'd love to do that, but we just don't have enough people. We need to hire more people. Anytime you hear that, that is a compliance. That's a compliance statement. They are basically saying, yeah, we need more people. We just don't have enough. And you're like, what do you mean you don't have enough? Which means that they aren't fully bought in.
Yeah.
I have a team right now. They're so bought in at Giant. We have to tell them to take time off.
Yeah, wowzers.
It's like, no, you're working way too hard, you guys. Don't work on the weekend. No, we're good. Because they're excited. They love it. There's trust. We can fight and work, but we, at the end, it's just like, this is so fun. We're building something that's changing the world. And that is capacity.
Yeah.
But when you have people who are constantly complaining that you need more employees and there's not enough, it's just, that's a form that's basically saying that there's not relational trust.
Again, I know there's no one right answer to this, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. Typically, if you've had a team that's perhaps less aware, they become aware, you know, someone listening to this in the car on the way to work is going, like, that sounds amazing, Jeremy. I'm all in. I want to do this. I'm going to engage with this. How rapidly would you start to see some results around this? Is it like almost an instantaneous thing, or does it take a little while for that trust to develop over time?
There's stages. 3 months, the five voices with some tools, you can start seeing like, oh my goodness, there's some lights there. The lights are coming on. There's interest. 6 months, you're starting to see 1, 2, 3, 4 of your people really use the language of buy-in. Over 9 months, it's like majority. And then over the course, like I've worked with a team this morning. This is going to sound funny. I've been working with them since 2003.
Wow.
My point, though, is that we created tools that are sticky and scalable, and people, and like their visuals and their, they make sense, and you want to pass them on. So it creates learning versus, hey, here's 28 books you need to go read, or we need to ship you off to a conference, or it's like, no, let's learn a tool in 20 minutes and apply it immediately. And all of a sudden they're like, that works. And so that's what we've been working on, is adult learning.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And going back to the trust level, I being a creative, I do read a lot. And, when you said, what are you reading? I think, oh, that's my love language right there. And I remember reading some of Patrick Lencioni's work, Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And, of course, at the base of that is trust.
That's right.
And so if you're going to create organizational health, trust is the foundational piece around that. So there's huge payoffs around that. Can we shift gears for a second? And I'm going to be metaphoric and literal. And I want to talk about your...
No pun intended.
Yes, your pun deliberately intended, the five gears.
Yes.
One of the challenges that lots of dental practice owners face is, they're doing their dentistry by day and they're kind of having to fit in all the business-related activities in between. And traditionally, dental schools have never taught a dentist how to run a business, how to run a team, finances, none of those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And the help that we really specialize in providing for practice owners is how to transition from being really exclusively on the tools, kind of peddling really hard, to creating some leverage in their life so that they have a balance between, rather than having an income or taking time off, that kind of either or equation, having it as an and. I want my income and I want time. But I would like to talk about the five gears here, because I think this is going to be a useful framework to think about time, busyness, overwhelm, all those sorts of things that are commonly experienced by small business owners, including dentists.
Yep. The idea of it is called, it's balanced productivity. Mm. So here's the idea. Dentistry is a factory, right? You're trading time for money, and there's certain things that are more valuable than other products.
Yes, that's true.
That people do. And so you, to be overly productive, so when you're not working, you're not making income. To be overproductive and underpresent is what happens. It actually undermines productivity. So the idea is like, well, I need to be on the grindstone. I need just to be, keep working, right?
Yeah.
So what we've figured out is we actually created a sign language, and I'll teach it to you very quickly. The sign language was basically created when I was trying to drive in London in a left-handed stick shift. And I was driving on the other side of the road, on the other side of the steering, and I was learning how to do it for the first time and shifting left-handed, okay? Which is awkward for an American. So I came up with a metaphor to explain to my business partner, Steve Cochran, of what I saw in his life around presence and productivity.
Okay.
So here's the metaphor. The five gears, it's a manual stick shift. The ideal is to be automatic when a vehicle shifts for you. So there's five gears. The fifth gear is focus mode. Fourth gear is task mode. Third gear is social. Second gear is really going deeper. It's connect mode. First gear is recharge. You need every gear every day. What tends to happen to adults over the age of 40 is we get too serious and we shift into waking up and the first thing we do is literally look at email. So someone's agenda from the night before will derail us in the morning, and we get into productivity mode very, very quickly. And we go 4, 5, 4, 5, 4, 5, which is task mode. It's root canal. Root canal might be focus mode because I got to really be in the zone.
Yeah.
But then you fourth gear, I've got to go in and do paperwork. I've got to sign these documents. I got blah, 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 blah. So you got office work, you have dental work, office, dental, fourth, fifth. Then you fake third gear, social. Hey, John, good to see you. How's the family? And dentists are really good at that. I mean, they just know how to, typically.
Yeah, it's a performance, right?
Yeah, it's performance. And then, and it's small talk, and that doesn't last long because their mouth is open and they can't talk much anyway. And so, and then you might have a moment of a connect mode with someone in your office and going deeper. Sally, how you doing? What do you need? What's going? So you connect with them and bond with them maybe a little bit. And then recharge. What is recharge? So how do people recharge? Because all you know is you're done. I finished my day and guess what? I got another one of those days tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then another one the next day and another the next day. So what we've done is we've basically figured out language to use at home and at work. At work, well, what does fifth gear look like? Talk about it with the team. What does fourth gear look like? Task. What does third gear look like? Social. Second gear, is there ever a need? Is there ever a time for social? I mean, a connect mode? Probably not a lot. Recharge. If you're an introvert, go take your lunch in your car. Go on a walk. It's okay. Go recharge for 20, 30 minutes. Whatever you need to do to recharge. But when you get home, this is when the transitions happen and the shifts happen. Because what happens is that our brains stay focused on our fourth, fifth gear work. Then we have to all of a sudden go home and we have fourth gear at home. We have tasks at home. I got to take the trash out. I got to pay the bills. And then you might still stay in fifth gear. I got to write a report or I'm going to do some work, you know, on our financials or whatever. That's fifth gear work at home. But then I've got these kids. What do I do with them? I got a spouse. What do I do with them? So what I figured out for myself and helping Steve too was create a trigger on the way home for work. First, decide what gear you should be in during the day and allow other people to be in the gear. But when you on your way home, pick a marker on the way home. I pick a bridge. When I get to the bridge, it's about 3 miles from my house. I stop taking any phone calls or thinking about anything else. And I start thinking about tonight. What are we doing tonight? We have dinner with friends. I'm going to go on a walk with Kelly, my wife. What conversation do I want to have? And I become intentional. When my kids were younger, I would think about, let's create a obstacle course. Let's go do a food fight night. Let's take them to, and I would create, and I had a room. So when I got home, I wasn't addicted to these devices. I stopped fourth and fifth gear.
Yeah, nice.
And between 6 and 9 o'clock, it was second and third gear time.
Yeah, lovely.
And so now we had language. So here's the beautiful part. Instead of nagging when your spouse goes, you're always on your phone. You never listen. Instead of that, we just call plays. Hey, guys. Hey, no. We're in third gear.
Yeah.
Hey, this is second gear night. Date night. Sign language now becomes objective language, not subjective drama.
Yeah.
Because if I nag at you and go, Jesse, you always, you never... Versus if I go, hey, dude, it's third gear. Or if I go, hey, I need some recharge time.
Hmm.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah.
Now we're just calling plays and we're learning to be present and productive at the same time.
Wow. I think that's really powerful. I really like the language of communicating there because, look, I can tell you really candidly, I find it hard to switch off and I find it hard to leave fourth and fifth gear behind sometimes. So I like the mental trigger. Many, many years ago when my firstborn child was young, she was really colicky and you know, you'd kind of walk home and you'd kind of be greeted with a screaming baby and a worn out wife. I don't think I've ever really admitted this out loud before, but my transition point, well, I'd finished a day of clinical dentistry, but my transition point was to go downstairs to the cafe and have a cup of coffee. And that was my transition. And I only now do I realize what I'm doing. I was just, you know, leaving that behind and mentally setting myself for what was to come.
That's right.
I was in a much better frame of mind when I did that. So I think it's really good. It just keeps things a little bit in their place.
And it's using the sign language. It's objective language. That's our whole secret of Giant. Common objective language. It takes the drama away.
Yeah.
Because now you're using, everyone uses the same language, sign language or terms or tool. And now it's just, it's easier to communicate.
You've written, I can't remember how many books, but it's a lot, right? I think it's six or seven. Yeah. And on the shelf behind you, there's the Peace Index. But the one I really want to ask about is your most recent book, which is The Communication Code. What were you wanting to solve when you sat down? Because you're writing a book is a lot of work. I mean, I've only written one and I'm 70% through my second. You know, it's not an easy process. It takes a while to organize your thoughts into something coherent and all the rest of it. So what was the problem you were seeking to solve with the most recent book?
This one is so good, Jesse. It's like, gosh, I love this idea because we basically realized every transmission of communication, if I transmit something to you, I have an expectation attached to it. And every expectation has a code word, like the Enigma code. If you can solve it, you unlock the expectation. So if I say to you, hey, yeah, Jesse, how's it going? Everything good? Where are we at on our quarterly reports? Okay, well, what are you saying? What's your expectation there? Mm. Or, hey, I really just need to talk, Jesse. Do you have any time we can get together? Yeah, what's your expectation? So we figured out there's 5 code words, and we figured out the hard way, because this goes back to Steve and I. Most of all of our content happens between our own tension between us. So our own clashes are pure gold, because we just write about them. And this was one where I was coming back from America. I was living in London. I was coming back from America, and we were meeting at this little tea house, Jack and Alice, little cafe. And I was so excited to celebrate the deal that I had just closed, the strategic partnership. And so I'm like, oh, dude, okay, you ready? I got some good news. And I start sharing all this with him. And Steve goes, huh, like, that's not how I thought we had talked about it. Why did you do it that way? Because we had talked about X, Y, and Z, and I thought you were going to do this and this and this. And he went on and on. And he was thinking he was collaborating, but it was feeling like critique. And I'm like, I'm here to celebrate, dude. We just closed this deal. And the deal that I closed was better than what we thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
How we got there, let's figure it out. Because it wasn't that big a deal. It was very much a win. And I just looked at him, and I literally turned like green. Like, I hulked out.
Oh, okay.
I literally like, you always do this. Why can't you just celebrate? And he was like, oh my gosh, what did I do? And I'm like, this happens every time. And his path tendencies, that his default communication, I felt it. And I finally realized this is what always happens. I'm wanting to celebrate and you critique. So you put water on my fire. And he goes, well, why didn't you tell me you wanted to celebrate? And I'm like, it was obvious. Why didn't you figure out that I wanted to celebrate? I'm telling you, we had good news. What we realized, and after I blew up and my shirt was all ripped like the Hulk, we finally simmered down, and we actually sat down. This was 7 years ago, and we wrote out the communication code, and we said, you know what? I bet you every single communication has a expectation code, has a code word to it. Hmm. It's either you want to celebrate, it's either you want care, you just want people to listen, or you want care, you want people to clarify. You want to collaborate, or you want to critique. You want some feedback that would help. There's probably, and so we basically settled on, like, we couldn't think of any more. Those were the 5 C's that we felt. So we realized, like, all communication is communicated, transmitting expectations. And if you can tell someone what the code word is, then your chances of having a good conversation and better relationship goes up. So if I said to you, hey, Jesse, I've got some things to share with you. I first need you to clarify. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that you know what I'm saying first. So make sure you do that. And then once that happens, I want your collaboration. I'm even open to your critique. I think this is such a good idea, but collaborate all you want, but let's just make sure you know. And then I go in and share. I just gave you the clue. Yeah. The clue is clarify first.
Going back to the 5 voices, is there a tendency for one voice to kind of launch into or to miss any of those cues? I'm thinking about your co-author, Steve. Yeah, I don't know him. I've never met him.
Right.
But does he have some guardian voices pretty loud?
No, he's a pioneer connector.
Okay.
Here's the tendency. The tendency of thinkers versus feelers. So thinkers would be pioneers, guardians.
Yes.
That would fit in. And creative pioneers.
Yes.
Or thinkers.
Yeah.
Feelers are going to be nurturers, connectors, and creative connectors.
Okay.
So what you're going to have is you're going to have tendencies that there's a default desire. So like if you customize my communication, I want, first and foremost, I want clarity first. Then I want to celebrate a little bit. And then we can collaborate.
Yeah.
That's really what I want from people. That's very much a feeler because I'm a connector, creative, pioneer. It's like, well, I'd love to collaborate. Like, I know you love to collaborate, but you need to understand what helps. I want to make sure we're relationally set. So if I bring something and you're constantly, if I'm needing care, I just need you to listen and you bring critique. my wall will go up of self-preservation and I'll pull back from you. And I won't, over time, I won't let you in and you'll have no clue. And then you'll go, what's with him? Man, he seems kind of, I don't know what that was, sensitive.
Yeah.
And you're like, no, no, I just constantly experience critique when you didn't, you solved an issue that wasn't even my issue because you didn't listen. I need you to listen first. I need to know that you're for me before I'm going to allow you to work on my, do you not think I'm thinking that? I am already thinking all these thoughts, but you want to give me your opinion. And that's what happens in marriage a lot of times. I had a group of executives here this morning. And I went through this, the default communication code. I said, what do you tend to do to your spouse and what do they want from you? And I went through and they were like, oh my goodness. And eight of them all tended to do one thing and none of them were doing what their spouse wanted from them.
Wowzers.
And then I reversed it and I said, so what do you want from your spouse and what do they tend to do to you? And only one out of eight, it actually matched.
Wowzers.
So you think, well, there's two ships crossing, missing in the night because of missed communication, which is missed expectation. So if you simply asked your spouse or your business partner or your key employee, I'm not saying every person you talk to, but just, hey, what's my default? What do I tend to do to you? And what do you want? Well, I want your care and I want to celebrate, and you tend to critique and try to collaborate.
What I'm hearing around all of this is if we understand some of these tools, for example, the five voices, the communication code, the five gears, again, there's common language, common understanding. It means we remove or lessen the chances of miscommunication, misunderstanding, and feeling unappreciated, unheard, undervalued, and so on. And we improve relationships. We improve ultimately buy-in, engagement in a work sense. In a personal sense, we create closeness, but all of those things can be, I guess, in some sense, boiled down to trust and understanding. And, you know, only good can come from that. So my question
is, absolutely,
where do people make boo-boos with this? I mean, this is a wonderful set of tools. It's a great suite of tools. And as I said, I've been exposed to some of them, but not all of them. Where do people come unstuck when they go, this is amazing? What are the common pitfalls, common challenges that people might encounter? Because I guarantee listening to this podcast, people will be going, oh, I need to find out more about those five voices or the communication code or whatever. So I just want to give them a couple of things that they might need to be mindful of as they go about thinking about these things.
Oftentimes people will hear, well, that's too hard. It's really interesting, but that just seems like too much. I don't have time for that. And then I go, great. Well, how's that working for you? How's being accidental to your family or to your team leaders? And it's not as hard as you think, because here's the beauty. You actually teach it to your team or your family and go through the journey together. And they will all start using the language. And all of a sudden, it like solves problems that you didn't even know. And you're like, oh my gosh, look. So-and-so is engaged for the first time. What happened? Because we built language that makes the cynical know-it-all adult become engaged.
Yeah.
They get it and it works, right? So you only have to start with one. Start with five gears. Start with the five voices. Start with the communication code. It doesn't matter from us. It's just you start somewhere and you start learning what your tendencies are. And then you start evaluating what your patterns are. This, I have a tendency to critique. When do I do that? When someone asks me for help, I start critiquing. And what do I tend to do? I kind of pile on very heavy. And what are the consequences of that? Well, I notice they pull back. What's the reality? They don't invite me to things. And so you're like, okay, well, what's a better trade-up? Yeah, instead of critiquing next time, I'm going to pause and I'm going to ask them what they need. What do you need from me right now? Do you need me to clarify? Do you want to celebrate? What is it specific care? What is it you need? Because I'm learning how to do this. Well, I just need you to care. I don't need anything right now. I just need you to listen. Okay. I don't know how to do that, but I'm just going to shut it. I'm just going to be present. My wife did that to me. And she's like, I just need you to care by listening. I'm like, well, sometimes you tell me too much information. about something I don't really care about. And she goes, exactly. I need you to care. I'm like, I need to care about the things my wife cares about. So I need to listen to the things that she is interested in.
Yeah.
And that's showing love. So that's an example of something I'm working on.
I love that. I've got a couple of things I'm working on as well. I think one of the beauties about all of these things is you're never done, always a work in progress, right? And it's the constant trying to grow, be better, live into your best self kind of example. And I really love these tools as frameworks to organize our thinking, frameworks to live into as well. And so, again, mate, I want to say thank you for all the work you do. It's really incredible and really, really practical is what I love, that accessible, practical kind of work. Jeremy, I think for those people that want to get a hold of your books, I know they're all up on Amazon. If you were going to recommend us, as you said, there's 6 or 7 books. Is there there's the Communication Code, there's the 5 Voices, 5 Gears, some others. Is there a particular book that's the really good entry point into this, or do you think any of them would be useful?
So there's a few books that are more relational that are good for anyone that are listening to, and they work really well in leadership. So the Communication Code and the Peace Index.
Yep.
They're very, very easy to get in and add an immediate tool to your world and very, very, very practical. And you can have an immediate win. The 5 Voices, you've got to get into. We recommend almost in inviting someone to process it, you know, like a group like yours to help people process it with them, because there's so much depth that you got to kind of go into it. 5 Gears is pretty easy as well. But it kind of just depends on what you're trying to accomplish. If you're trying to work on relational trust and communication, then the Communication Code, the Peace Index. If you are working on work-life balance and then the 5 Gears, time management, probably the most powerful book on leadership is the 100X Leader, bar none. It is the quintessential, it's the field guide for leadership. It's the Sherpa story. It's all of our tools around truly how do you build a culture? How do you lead teams? How do you lead people in a very fresh way? And when people read it, they're shocked. They're like, oh my goodness, it reset the way I view leadership. So it kind of just depends on what you're interested in.
So ladies and gents, if you're listening to this, please head across to Amazon or whichever bookstore you prefer. Grab a copy of one of the books that you think is going to be helpful for where you're at. You know, sink your teeth into it. I've been really impressed with the work. It's been really helpful. We've rolled it out in our team. And I really commend this tool and tools to you. It's really, really practical, really accessible, as I said. Jeremy, I'm mindful of the hour of night for you in the US there. So I want to just be respectful of your time, but I can't finish up without just saying thank you. Not just for this conversation. I think the work that you do is really important. I think it actually makes life easier and better for those of us in business, and those of us who are all of us really who interact with people. As we said off air, I think, or at the beginning of the conversation, all of the challenges in life, most of them are often people related. So anything that helps is amazing.
The hardest skills. For sure. It's always, people always call them soft skills. I'm like, are you kidding me? I used to work in private equity, and it was, we had, strategy, capital, or people. Strategy is relatively easy. Capital is once you figure out your system, people will always screw it up. And so how do you create people to become an asset, not a liability? That's the game.
That is the game, mate. So thank you for providing the field manual for the game. Appreciate it.
It's great. Appreciate you.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.